like a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Dove with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? He'd be a pot of stock, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of dicks.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. An insurgent group called the Islamic State of Iraq has taken credit for yesterday's suicide lunchroom bombing of Parliament that killed at least one and wounded 22. The group includes al-Qaeda. The attack was the worst breach of security ever to occur in the highly fortified Green Zone. World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz is under increasing pressure to resign after admitting he unilaterally gave his girlfriend a promotion and a large salary boost shortly after his nomination to the job by President Bush. The bank's board of directors says it has investigated and will release its findings soon. Wolfowitz is a longtime government employee and White House political advisor. It appears North Korea will miss tomorrow's deadline to begin shutting down its main nuclear reactor. Pyongyang says it won't move until it confirms the U.S. has unfrozen $25 million North Korean dollars in a Macau bank. In Washington, top-ranking lawmakers on the Senate Judiciary Committee say they'll get an expert to try to recover emails the Bush administration says it has accidentally lost. Those emails are considered crucial evidence in the Senate's investigation of the White House firing of 8 federal attorneys. Also on Capitol Hill, the Senate Finance Committee has approved a bill authorizing the government to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies for cheaper Medicare drugs. The House version of the measure requires the government to do so. President Bush has threatened a veto. New Jersey's governor was critically injured last night when a truck hit his motorcade on the Garden State Parkway. A state trooper accompanying Governor John Corzine was also hurt. The 60-year-old governor today is recovering from emergency surgery. He was not wearing his seatbelt at the time of the hit-and-run accident. This morning, a NATO soldier died of wounds sustained in a gun battle in southern Afghanistan. Two other soldiers were wounded. Yesterday, two NATO soldiers were killed and one wounded in eastern Afghanistan. Heavy winter weather is forecast to continue throughout the Midwest and New England areas this weekend. Power is out and airports and schools remain closed. Slick roads led to serious injuries in a 70-car pileup near Minneapolis. The Northeast can expect another foot of snow before Sunday. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Attention business owners. Getting new customers is now just one click away. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, you got us. It's actually two clicks away with the new MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com is more than an online yellow pages. It's an interactive gateway that connects customers with your business, all in just two clicks. Why continue to pay thousands of dollars on an antique advertising medium, especially one that ends up going into the recycling bin? Make the smart upgrade at only a fraction of the cost. Try for yourself. MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com will put your business in the radar of thousands of potential customers. They'll be able to make reservations online, even print out the map with directions, all in just two clicks. Call 1-800-505-1883 today to find out more about this great new service. The sooner you do, the faster your cash register will start to ring. The number again is 1-800-505-1883. MyLocalYP.com.
The CDC says one out of four cases of gonorrhea is now resistant to common antibiotics. The health agency says a different kind of drug should be used to avoid a public health crisis. More than 700,000 Americans are infected with the sexually transmitted gonorrhea annually. Australia's Prime Minister says migrants and refugees with HIV should be denied entrance to his country. Prime Minister John Howard says changes in federal law will be investigated and immigration procedures modified if possible. CBS Radio has joined MSNBC in firing broadcaster Don Imus. Imus has been widely condemned for a racist remark he made last week referring to the Rutgers women's basketball team. In March, U.S. wholesale prices jumped 1%, analysts say, due to increases in the costs of fuel and food. Prices for everything else besides energy and food remained flat. In India, Infosys Technologies posted a surge in quarterly net profit exceeding 70%. Annual revenues topped $3 billion. The company credited outsourcing. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.03 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 36 points, NASDAQ up 1, S&P 500 up 2. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look. Right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to
11. 11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a beginning of a new week. I hope you all had a really good holiday weekend. I sure did. You know, I don't necessarily celebrate this particular holiday, but had a really, really great weekend. Saw a mate of mine and his girlfriend that I haven't seen in over 3 years, moved to Adelaide to go back home and deal with some family and whatnot, and this is like one of my best friends in the history of time. Also, not only that, a guy who's got one of the most awesome singing voices, and today's track of the day is even just a tad do in honor of my mate Heath, who is just a stellar guy and just a wonderful friend, and I can't even tell you how cool it was to see him, and we had big food. cooked up some ribs and some chicken and drank a bunch of beer and had a really, really, really good time. But the first story today, hold on to your hats, kids. I mean, this is no joke, and I couldn't believe it when I found this today. Hold on to your hats, kids. Too stupid to be president, almost took himself out. Off of groovygreen.com, and he almost took out Dick Cheney, too. and I mean took out. Bush almost blows himself up with Ford hydrogen hybrid. This is not a joke. This is being reported by the Huffington Post and the Detroit News. Get this. President Bush nearly blew up a Ford hydrogen plug-in hybrid at a photo op by attempting to plug in a charging cord into the hydrogen tank. Ford CEO Alan Mulally earned a portion of his reported $39.1 million salary by preventing him from doing so. Mulally told journalists at the New York Auto Show that he intervened to prevent President Bush from plugging an electrical cord into the hydrogen tank of Ford's hydrogen electric plug-in hybrid at the White House last week. He says, I grabbed his arm and I moved it up to the front, Mullally said. I wanted the president to make sure he plugged it in into the electricity, not into the hydrogen. This is all off the record, right? Sorry, mate. It wasn't. You moron. You absolute moron. I don't wish ill on anyone, but I'll tell you what, this could have saved us all a whole lot of hassle. Oh, man. It's like, you couldn't ask for a better story than this for first thing on a Monday morning. And there's a picture. Go to the today's show post. There's a photo. And Dick Cheney's right there. We were so close. We were so close. Anyway, it's a riot. I think it's an absolute riot. It's just it's proof positive that this man is too stupid to be president. And the only reason that he is president is because he stole it. But that's a whole other issue. I absolutely just died laughing when I saw that story. You know, when I start prepping for the show, I've got a handful of websites that I go straight for. First thing, Tree Hugger and Groovy Green are right on the top. Yeah, right in the chat room saying we almost had a twofer. Oh man, I would have been very, you know, it would have been a sad thing because, you know, the CEO of Ford, his family would have suffered a great loss. But, you know, hey, good on him for spotting it, you know, and just going, sorry, Mr. President, how about sticking it in here instead? it's a classic. It's a classic. And, you know, this is one of those that, and I haven't been there in a while. There's a website, toostupidtobepresident.com, and I haven't been there in ages. A guy used to do some really, really great, flash animations, and I bet he could have a heyday with this. And yes, that would mean instantly Madam Pelosi is president. I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't really be laughing at this, but you know what? This guy's killed a lot of innocent people. To me, this would have been karma. Bush killed by a hybrid. I just can't stand the irony. Oh, the irony. Oh, the irony. Anyway. I'll get away from it. And check this out. Over at Tree Hugger. Again, a great example of that. Green transportation is not wimpy. Here's one for the petrol heads out there who should become electric heads. An electric motorcycle breaks the speed record. An electric motorbike powered entirely by lithium-ion batteries has just broken the record for the electric motorbike quarter mile. The bike broke 155 miles per hour and finished the quarter mile in less than 9 seconds. That's quick. Now, the big story about this, and this is Tree Hugger goes on to say this, isn't the numbers about 0 to 60. It's about the battery development, and they were developed by A123 Systems, and are already delivering more power more safely than any other lithium-ion battery. They don't yet have the power density of the Tesla Roadster's batteries, but they're catching up quick. And I think that's outstanding. That's something else. And this is where we continue to put money into research and development for these technologies. And, you know, it's just going to get better and better and better and better. And more and more viable, because it actually is already viable. The only reason that it's not happening is because we don't have, you know, the government mandates really putting the push on the car companies to do the right thing and to make the investment. And it's a hot looking motorcycle, too. Great picture over at treehugger.com. There's links to all this stuff, of course, at today's show post, as per usual. And we're probably getting up on our first break here shortly. And I've got something that we'll get into in the second half of the show that I think is going to be really interesting. And I really want to look at getting the author of this book, Walkable Streets, Mr. Dom Nozzi, or Nozzi, not sure, it's N-O-Z-Z-I, N-O-Z-Z-I. I've read his essays before, and he really has some interesting, and it's all really common sense, but it's all about the fact that our cities and our towns are outside of human scale, and they're really not livable places. They're not meant for human beings. You know, it's just not. They just don't work. And so I've got a whole bit of a thing that I'm going to read. I'm going to read most of the essay in a little bit. But we're heading to our first break. If you want to get in on the program, dial in to 1-877-443-2366 on the B1 Louder phone line. And stick around. You're with Foxed Up, coming to you live from Sydney, Australia, here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's go. Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here for a Monday morning. And Joe Vecchio was in pretty good form this morning. He kept giving himself such hell for not being awake yet. But you know what? I dig Joe. I really do. And like I said before, this feels so at home following Joe Vecchio just because of past history. But that's, you know, that's just the way it is. Get this. From The Guardian. And, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, frankenfood and other things. There's an interesting little piece from The Guardian here about digging in Britain's green revolution on the home front. This is from John Vidal, the environmental editor. And during the Second World War, the government famously urged every able man and woman in Britain to dig for victory, to grub up their flower beds, to tear up their lawns and grow vegetables to avoid widespread hunger. Today, a new British land army of gardeners appears to be doing the same thing to avoid eating industrially produced foods. New figures from the Horticultural Trades Association show a 31% increase in the sales of vegetable seed to householders and a corresponding 32% decline in the sale of flower seeds. We are also buying nearly twice as many seedlings and young edible plants like tomatoes and marrows, and are growing far more herbs than ever before. Confirmation that the worm is turning away from the flower growing to vegetables comes from the Royal Horticultural Society and seed companies, which say that vegetable seed sales are now outstripping flower seeds for the first time since the Second World War. I find this fantastic. Sutton's, which sells nearly a third of all household vegetable seeds in the UK, said this week that there had been a massive increase in vegetable growing in Britain. We are seeing a big move away from the flower seeds to vegetables. There's been a dramatic rise in things like sales of onions and potatoes. Spuds in particular are nearly 60% up on last year, which was 20 to 30% up on the year before, a spokesman said. This year, the company expects a 30% increase in its sales of UK vegetable seeds. The proof that we are going back to our roots is seen in Britain's 330,000 allotments. 33 years ago, thousands of acres fell into disuse and were taken back by local authorities for development. Today, almost all allotments are full, and it is nearly as hard to get one as to get a place in a good school. And, you know, this, again, going along with the mad return of local farmers markets and all this kind of thing, people don't trust frankenfood. I mean, you look at the spinach stuff that's gone on, you know, it takes one producer and you poison the entire nation, you know. And not only that, they're killing our animals, too, by using, you know, non-feed grade additives into pet food. Good on the Brits. And I wonder if there's similar trends happening in the United States. And I say here, the reasons given for the shift to vegetable growing in the most urbanized country in Europe range from a political desire not to be beholden to large supermarkets, to a new awareness about healthy food and the environment, and a deep dissatisfaction with industrially grown food. You know, and more power to them. More power to them. I think it's absolutely kick-ass. Brilliant. Brilliant. Ah! Right on. Ray Dean's telling me here that he went over to freecycle.org. And he got himself a computer chair this weekend. And I reckon that this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Freecycle.org, it's an extension of Yahoo. And you just kind of you sign up to your local area and people post things that they would normally throw out. Perfectly usable goods. Like we picked up this 1928 Singer sewing machine. That's just outstanding. and we've got a whole bunch of stuff lined up to put up on FreeCycle in the next couple of weeks. And sorry, Radine. My mistake. It's hard to tell. You don't it's kinda hard to tell in the chat room. Boy, am I embarrassed. But FreeCycle is a really, really, really great thing. I've seen people get computers. You know, someone who cannot afford, to buy a computer can get like an old Pentium 2 and get themselves on the net and using email. You know, they're constantly there. I mean, monitors galore at the moment because you got all these people going out and buying their new, you know, LCDs and whatnot, and suddenly they have these CRTs that they need to unload, and instead of having them end up prematurely in landfill, people can pick them up and make use of them. And I am so sorry, Radine. I am so sorry. See, I knew a male Radine, the only Radine I've ever known. So that's why I did that. At least that's my excuse, and I'm sticking with it. But I want to move on to the track of the day. And I do, you know, I pick these things out of the ether for whatever reason comes across my twisted brain. And today it's purely because I got to catch up with this really, really great mate of mine. And he and I have, you know, done some playing and some singing together and whatnot, and you know, we've never been able to get enough time to really get something happening. You know, maybe someday we will. I mean, this guy, I don't know, sounds kind of like a cross between, I'd say, Jim Morrison and Chris Cornell, but yet he looks like he could be in the Backstreet Boys. But I decided to pick a song, a rock and roll song, about rock and roll. Because, well, there are quite a few of them out there, and this is a classic. And this is one of my particular favorites. This song never ceases to just kind of get my heart pumping and wanna, you know, get back into really making music again. I find this a very inspirational song. So if you got it already there, Bob, who's producing today, I have the wondrous Bob Kincaid producing today, from Foreigner, from back, got to be over 20 years ago now. A great song about wanting to be a rock and roll hero, jukebox hero. Roll it, Bob.
Standing in the rain, with his head hung low. To the wall, and like a distant
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in the news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to NAJA.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. Nice pick, Bob. Little feet. Ah, so smooth, so smooth. Alright, let's get into the big thing for the day. You know, I've had fun with Bush almost blowing himself up with a hybrid car. That was lots of fun. But I want to go to this thing. You can check this out at walkablestreets.com. And I really want to get this book, because I really like virtually everything I've ever read on this site, and just the ingredients of a walkable street. It says, how does a community create walkable streets? Streets that feel safe for all, particularly seniors and children. Streets that are sociable due to large numbers of pedestrian users. Streets that are richly interesting. Streets that provide comfort, streets that breed a strong sense of civic pride. There are a number of essential ingredients that a community must use to craft and sustain a walkable street. Convivial concentration of pedestrians. First and foremost, a walkable street must contain relatively large numbers of preferably friendly pedestrians. This obvious ingredient would go without saying, except for the fact that there are many who believe that various physical street design features are sufficient to create walkability. Actually, even the best designed streets are not truly walkable if you walk on them. On the other hand, even a poorly designed street, in the physical sense, can be
memorably walkable if it contains large numbers of pedestrians. Very little is more attractive and enjoyable to most humans and inherently sociable species than a vibrant, festive place filled with happy, friendly people. This partly explains the overwhelming popularity of street festivals and public markets that are well known in their ability to create and sustain such gatherings. Residential densities. In order for a street to draw large numbers of pedestrians, large concentrations of people must either live within walking distance of the street, or the street needs to be a connecting conduit between two or more highly attractive destinations, destinations that are no more than, say, 3 to 5 blocks from each other. For example, a major university campus linked by a main street to a healthy downtown. Human-scaled dimensions. This is one of my favorite bits, because I think this is something where we've gone so wrong. People tend to feel most comfortable and safe when they are in human-scaled spaces. That is, spaces that do not dwarf them, make them feel insignificant or overexposed. Crucially, this means that horizontal and vertical dimensions of the surrounding physical elements of a street are relatively modest in size. In general, this means that streets are no more than 2 or 3 lanes wide. In the more urban areas of town, buildings are pulled up to and abutting street-side sidewalks, and front porches are within conversational distance of sidewalks. Surface parking lots are tucked behind buildings and walls. Street lights are no more than 20 to 30 feet tall. Modest street light structures effectively establish a romantic ambience. And this is really true. You know, there's a difference. You know, there are certain parts of actually Melbourne that do this kind of well, now that I think about it, where, you know, the street lights aren't these gargantuan things that, you know, kind of arc over like, you know, some sort of cobra thing from War of the Worlds at four stories, or, you know, 2-3 stories high, but, like, you know, actually, you know, a lamp post of human size. The urban fabric is uninterrupted by gap-toothed parking lots. Instead, a continuous street wall is maintained. Buildings tend to be no greater than 5 stories, such as found in Paris. Note, however, the buildings along a walkable street should generally be at least 2 stories in height in order to more effectively create the pleasing sense of enclosure and to increase opportunities along the street for vertical mixed-use buildings in which a first floor is occupied by an office or store and above stories are occupied by a residence. Human-scaled streets create an overwhelmingly pleasant feeling of being within an outdoor room, and as a result create that all-important sense of place. And I don't know about you. You know, I grew up in the New Jersey suburbs of Manhattan, you know, so I, you know, massive city. And over the years, I, you know, the awe and spectacle of large cities has just completely, I've lost all, you know, affectation for it. It's just it's not human scale. He moves on to say, active and diverse retail. An essential ingredient for a street to be walkable in the more urban area of town is for the street to be lined with a rich collection of healthy, diverse, local retail establishments. Such an assemblage of enterprises ensures people that strolling down such a street will nearly always reward one with a fascinating cornucopia of sights, smells, sounds, and potentially satisfying purchases no matter how often the street is walked, as opposed to what we have now, that you almost can't tell an Australian city from the average American city because as you walk down the road, it's Starbucks, Kmart, McDonald's, Starbucks, McDonald's. Traffic calming. This is another one that I very, very much agree with. For retail establishments and residences along a street to be healthy and for pedestrians to feel comfortable, a walkable street nearly always must contain relatively low-speed motor vehicle traffic. The most important way to provide such modest, comfortable speeds is to provide ample on-street parking, which not only slows cars but creates an extremely healthy, safe buffer between the pedestrian and moving motor vehicles. to calm motor vehicle speeds, it is also important that the streets be no more than two or three lanes, ideally two travel lanes with turn pockets. Travel lanes should be no more than 10 or 11 feet wide. A prominent canopy of street trees and buildings pulled up to the sidewalk also create a moderating influence on motor vehicle speeds. A common mistake is to assume that the ideal form of traffic calming or creation of walkable street is to create a pedestrian mall, a pedestrian-only street where motor vehicles are prohibited. And they do this in Europe. Germany does this. You have the Fussgang, and that, like, this is where I used to busk when I was living in Lübeck. And Lübeck, it wasn't just the Fussgang that was no traffic. There were surrounding streets and alleyways that had no automobile traffic, and then you get a couple blocks out from there, and then you could have some automobile traffic, but it was set up in such a way that people could walk through the city and not feel overwhelmed and feel like there was a sense of space, but yet there was still all this activity. And, you know, aside from the corner McDonald's at one end of the Fussgang, you know, you did have local merchants and retailers and, you know, and a variety of things. It wasn't just this horrible thing that we have these days in most urban areas of just same. It's boring. And you go downtown Sydney, it's just terrible because, I mean, I hate it when I have to go into the city because it's just packed. It's mobbed. And you have these buildings right up against, you know, what's hardly a meter and a bit sidewalk, and you have thousands of people trying to get around, and the buildings just get bigger and bigger and encroach more and more on the street, which means that there's less place for people to walk. So what have they done? They create all these underground malls with interconnecting underground tunnelways so that the pedestrians can actually get from place to place. And I think that is ridiculous. I do believe we're coming up on our last break of the day, and we'll come back and I'll cover a little bit more of this. I won't get through the whole thing, but I do recommend that you go to walkablestreets.com and check out some of the essays from this gentleman. Some really, really well thought out stuff. So you got a few minutes to get in on the program if you'd like to. If you want to, dial into 1-877-443-2366 or email me, John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. Love to hear from you. Love to hear what you think of the show. Stick around. We got a lot more that we're going to try and cram into the last few minutes here before we pass things off to Mr. Jeff Allen Wolf. So stick around. You're here on the Horn, America's liberal voice, coming to you live from Sydney. We'll be right back.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop, right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Everybody, welcome back up here on the Head On Radio Network. And I was just checking my email, and I just got an email from Billy Shears, and I can't wait to read this. His guest commentary this week is by singer, musician, and songwriter and producer Mark Marshall. That should be awesome. I would suggest going over to shearsmusic.livejournal.com. And speaking of Mr. Shears, Mr. Shears is going to begin contributing to this very program in a very, very short time. We are going to have a weekly segment, Music with Billy Shears, and we're working out the details, and we're working out his production stuff and whatnot, and he's going to do a nice little pre-recorded segment. And so once a week, the track of the day will come from our own Billy Shears, who is just... He's a wonder of musical content, and I just think it's really cool. I threw the idea at him, and he jumped at it, and I'm very, very happy about that. So getting back to the ingredients for a walkable street, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I'm going to skip down a bit. Here's one of the points that he makes that I think is rather crucial. 24-hour activity. Right, a walkable street must be alive day and night instead of closing down at 5 p.m. 24-hour streets tend to be not only more interesting and fun, but also much safer due to the benefits of citizen surveillance and eyes on the street. Again, 24-hour activity is promoted by the development of relatively high residential densities within the walkable catchment area of the street. Residences provide after-hours pedestrian activity as residents will walk to stores, services, culture, parks, and the homes of friends and family throughout the day and night. Studies by the nation's leading investment indicator firms have shown over and over again that 24-hour cities harbor the most hip, cutting-edge, exciting, yet safe places to be for what Richard Florida calls the creative class. Some cities might find useful to control and restrict the percentage of buildings along a street intended to be walkable by limiting the number of offices along the street, since offices tend to be closed and therefore deadening after 5 p.m. I think this is really, really, really crucial. You know, if the seat is live and jumping and happening, this is what's happening in your city, there's a whole lot less opportunity for crime.
You know? But when the place goes dead and dark and quiet, then people look to take advantage. I don't know. These are all really, really simple concepts in my mind. Narrow lots. An important way to create a lively, exciting, and interesting street life is to establish relatively narrow property widths along the sidewalk. Doing so increases the frequency of energy-producing doors, windows, and other elements essential to an enjoyable pedestrian experience. Wide sidewalks. like I was saying about Sydney before. It goes without saying that a walkable street should provide sufficiently wide sidewalks. In general, such sidewalks should range from 8 to 20 feet in width, depending on the pedestrian volumes expected. Note that there is too much of a good thing when it comes to sidewalks. Overly wide sidewalks can be just as undesirable as sidewalks that are too narrow, because wide sidewalks that carry only a handful of pedestrians create the undesirable sense that the area is not very active or alive. Whereas a narrower sidewalk with the same modest number of pedestrians can seem bustling with life. Therefore, it's important that sidewalks use a width that corresponds to the expected pedestrian use along the street, striking a balance between pedestrian comfort and the need to create a lively ambience, even when there are not enormous numbers of pedestrians. I'm telling you, I really love where this guy comes from. Walkablestreets.com, folks, check it out. Active building fronts. Increasingly, streets are neglected and degraded by buildings that turn their back to the street. On a walkable street, the fronts of buildings face the street side sidewalk. Having doors and ample window facing the street creates visual interest for the pedestrians and energizes the street by providing a view of the inside of the building and having pedestrians enter and exit the building onto the sidewalk. Doors facing the street substantially reduce pedestrian walking distances. Likewise, walkable streets feature residences with front porches, where porch occupants can interact with those on the sidewalk, and where pedestrians can enjoy seeing a home that sends a walkable, friendly character to the public realm, even when the porch is unoccupied. To be an active, interesting street, buildings along a walkable street have very little in the way of blank walls, which creates monotony and reduces security. Garages on walkable streets are recessed to avoid conveying the unpleasant message that a car, not people, live there. Great point. Great point. And actually, Gail and I were down in the city last week when we had to go pick up our 1928 sewing machine from freecycle.org. And we were walking through Surrey Hills, which is right around Central Station, and it's one of the oldest areas of downtown Sydney. And, you know, it's like the original Australian Federation-style homes. And they have these kind of front porch entrances with usually a second-floor kind of balcony thing. And, you know, I was saying to Gail, I said, you know, I just imagine what this area was like back in the 40s, before this city was so unbelievably overpopulated. And I reckon that Surrey Hills very much had a lot of these things going for it. But see, now there's too many people. It's now really high rent district. Because there aren't many of these Federation homes left. So many other suburbs have gone for the short-sightedness of knocking down history and building new super stupid high density I'll never know my neighbors after living there for a decade style apartment complexes, which I think is really, really sad. It's tragic. I said, walkablestreets.com, and there's a few different things there. There was a set of principles that I read from about a month or so ago that based on Native American tribal principles that kind of cross a lot of it crosses on with deals with the same aspects as in this piece. And he gets into things like proximity and short block lengths and appropriate businesses, you know, no big box retailers, you know. Make it a place where your local, you know, entrepreneurs and suppliers. I mean, we're having trouble even these people get driven out just by the high rents because these majors come in and buy it all out, gut the buildings and then put in their, you know, stupid malls. I think shopping malls, the modern shopping mall, is one of the worst things that's happened to society because it's not human scale. It's not human scale, and I think we have to get back to being in human scale. And this is all environmental as well. You know, you make things human scale, people will walk, people will bike. People won't have to drive to the outskirts of town to save $2. You know, and all that economy, all that money stays local as opposed to going over to China or, you know, wherever. Because the more you buy locally, the better off your community is going to be. You know, I'd rather pay 5% more and know that I'm paying, you know, for this guy's rent, you know, supporting a local business. And I'm big on that. And I always believe that I get so much more in service and value for my dollar for doing that. So anyway, we've got to wrap it up, folks. Thank you so much to Bob Kincaid for producing the program today. Fill it in for Agnes today. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions. Thank you to the Carpenters for everything they do. Thank you to our mods, our bloggers, everybody that makes the horn rock on. Some very interesting new developments maybe possibly coming up. And don't forget, Jaws, the Jeff Allen Wolf Show coming up next here on the Head On Radio Network. As we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green, and we'll see you tomorrow.
An admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotion.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
This breaking news story just in, Al-Qaeda number 3 confesses to stealing the lost White House emails in the DOJ case. Senate votes to lift stem cell ban. House committee asks oil firm CEOs to explain why gas might soon cost $4 per gallon. Retirement rumors loom over senator with attorneys-linked ethics problem. Massachusetts offers details on health coverage. Senate subcommittee to consider legislative response to FBI's national security letter abuses. Senate panel seeks missing White House records. Al-Qaeda number 3. Christian conservatives' power diminished ahead of 2008 vote. Obama challenges McCain on Iraq stroll. Nuclear power enters global warming debate. Democrats seek to lead the way in tax overhaul. The ethical dilemma of robotics. Three scenarios for 2008. Did Bush plan the Iraq regime change before becoming president? Waiting is the hardest part for troops in limbo in Iraq. Most Americans see recession in the next 12 months. U.S. launches fresh accusations at Iran over Iraq. Iran to issue book and CD on capture of British soldiers. Studies shows NYC a top greenhouse gas producer, and China's inevitable rise risks conflict, says Kissinger. These are the issues ahead. Into the Wolf's Den, starting now.